Hello and welcome to The Indoorsman, your podcast guide to the great indoors. I am Matt, your podcast host, video game journalist, and very good kisser.
Well, I mean, how do I even introduce myself after that? I was just going to go, I'm Cliff, and I play some games occasionally, and hate everything and everyone, and am proficient in the mouth arts.
But not in describing them in a way that makes them palatable to anyone whatsoever.
Wait, that was the sexiest thing anyone's ever heard.
The mouth arts.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a weird, just obscure way to reference it.
It sounds like you went to like mouth technical school, so you learnt the basics, but none of the finesse.
I'm not just constricting myself just to kissing either. It's just everything mouth related. I'm proficient.
This is getting blue. Let's talk about video games.
I was going to say, do you need someone to make a pop sound? Because I can do that. See? I can do that.
You didn't even have to use your finger. That's impressive.
Nope. I'm talented like that. I have
used my finger.
See? Proficient.
That, yeah. Put that on your resume.
Oh, I should.
I would love to see the job you get based on that particular skill, though.
That's just all I do. I just do that for video games and various animated movies and stuff. I just make that sound.
Just pop Foley?
Yeah.
Well, it's not going to come in that useful, this, because there's nothing poppy about this week's news. So, why don't we pop off by you telling me what you've been playing for video games this week,
Boo.
Cliff?
I've just been continuing on with the, you know, PUBG. It's pretty fun. Just doing my thing, playing mostly solo, because you just don't get much in terms of points for squad. Admittedly, I'm not actually getting that much in the way of good drops out of crates. I keep getting the same boring bright coloured t-shirts and hats and shit like that, so that's crap. But I have been playing a bit more of the Futurama mobile game. So the event for the alien invasion, the Omicron Persei 8.
That's right, you were talking about that the other week.
Yep, that finished up. I didn't get through it all because I basically just hadn't had everything leveled up enough. I came in too late to actually be able to do everything properly. Just didn't have the resources. But I got through. I unlocked a few people. I unlocked Lur. I didn't get Under, unfortunately. But I got Lur. And they've had since then they've had a couple of little events. So they've had one where you could get like Calculon and Monique and that beeping robot that's sleeping with Monique and muscling in on Calculon's
something. Atron 5000.
I think his name's Boxy or Beepy or something like that. But they had that event, and that was, you know, that was all right. But at the moment they're doing, his name's Boxy. He's a delivery boy. That's his class in the game. Okay. So at the moment they've got, a character, what's his name? The Borax kid. He's from one of the newer seasons. So he's in it, and you got to go, gunslinging on the moon, and you got to craft bullets, and then you go through the missions, and instead of actually fighting creatures, you just can shoot or run away, and then you got like a 20% chance to hit the enemy, so you hit the button and you might miss, but it wastes a bullet, so you've got limited bullets and stuff. Right. It's pretty good. I want to get the Borax kid. I'm about to get Ramblin' Rodriguez, a costume for Bender, so that's going to be pretty good. But yeah, I'm just playing more of that, and that's, you know, it's kind of fun for a mobile game, I suppose. But what I did do is they had between the two specials, they had a special couple of days where you could earn double pizza in this, because pizza slices are like the paid
The premium currency.
Yeah, but you can, like most of these games, you can watch a 30-second clip to get a slice of pizza, and you can do that, you know, three or four times a day, and you slowly over time build up enough pizza to unlock something that's actually interesting. But they had a thing where it was double points for the other offers they had, not just the watching of the videos. So I did one of these other offers, and the other offer was to play the Final Fantasy mobile game, the tie-in game, for 15.
Oh, a kingdom divided or a new empire or something?
Something like that, yeah. So bad. And if you get your Citadel to level 10, you got 381 pieces of pizza or something like that, which is a huge amount, considering you're getting four or five a day. Yeah. So I thought, like, okay, cool, the big event's gone. Like, I'm not really doing much in the game at the moment. I'll give it a crack and see what I can do. So I completed it after three or four days of, like, constantly pressing stuff on my screen for the dumb Final Fantasy game. It was all right. I got tons of pizza out of it. I can now buy the Crushinator if I want in the Futurama game, because she's 200 slices of pizza. So I could do that. So I've just been basically doing that. That's what I've been doing around work and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I got into the Simpsons sort of click-a-thon game for a while, which was good at that. You get kind of a point of diminishing returns with these freemium games where you can keep playing, but it's not as fun because there's all this stuff that you can't get unless you drop money on the premium currency, donuts in this case, of course.
Yeah, I figure that this Futurama game is basically a reskin of the Simpsons one.
Oh, yeah.
Which is probably a reskin of another one.
So yeah, it's real slow going, unless there's a Reddit community where you give them your password and they hack your save and give you a massive sort of near infinite amount of premium currency.
Ooh.
For no money, no reward, they just do it. And then you just buy all of the things and stack up the town, and then guess what? It's not fun anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
You've got the things, and there's no reason to keep coming back, so I stopped.
Yeah.
I've had a couple games like that over the years on, you know, my phone or my iPad, and they're great, but it's incredibly rewarding to delete them as well. Like, I remember Clash of Clans was one that I stuck with for a fair while.
Yeah, I've seen that advertised around a lot.
The ads for it are really good. The ads are more fun than the game. So yeah, sort of deleting that kind of stuff is just really, really rewarding. I was playing this dumb pirate one years ago and was just slavishly playing it every day. And then I was like, oh, I should get rid of it, but I enjoy it. But I'll miss it. And then I deleted it. And within 2 days, I'd forgotten that I'd ever played it.
Yeah, I get the feeling that it's going to happen when I finally do put down Futurama. Just be like, yeah, whatever, it's now gone. Like, I care. Like Pokemon Go, that's still a thing, apparently.
Yeah, they're going to introduce trading, apparently. Does anyone care?
No. Not at all.
The raid battles are still a thing, and everyone's pissed because there's like an exclusive raid that's only in Japan or something. Like, oh, that's right, the legendary dogs from Gold and Silver are doing the rounds at the moment. They spend a couple of days on each continent before they sort of rotate, and you have to try and catch them in that time. So, yeah, like I deleted Pokemon Go many months ago and do not miss it at all. Mm-hmm. It was nice for the first few days, but then it's just like, nah, guys, not enough there.
Yeah. I agree.
But it's a good thing then that I've got other games to play besides Pokemon Go, you know, actual games with gameplay.
Proper games.
I have two to talk about this week. Only two.
Slipping,
son. I can't talk about till next week, so it's just two.
I was going to say, so what, only one? But so three, but one you can't talk about until next week.
Two that are not embargoed. So the first one is one that I had to sort of knock off last week's episode because we were running a bit long. I think we hit an hour and 10 or something in the end.
We did Game of Thrones it up a bit at the end. So
we did.
Which made it run long. But that's fine because that's an optional bit of listening at the end.
Yeah, you don't have to. It's podcast DLC.
It's bonus content. Yeah, but it's free DLC.
So does that mean we're probably apologizing for something based on current trends in video game design?
No, we're just actually servicing the community and actually doing something good out of the goodness of our hearts. Please give us money for that DLC.
No, that doesn't sound right. Yeah, come donate to our Patreon that we totally have. We don't have one of those. Maybe we should get one. I don't think anyone would give us money.
We could just give each other money, and that way it would make it look like we're like super great Patreons. I'm assuming that's what you call it. I don't really know anything about Patreon.
Patrons, I think they call them. Unfortunately, you can see a full list of everyone who's backing a particular Patreon. So if it says Matt and Cliff's Patreon, backed by Matt and Cliff.
So we need to make accounts that say totally not Cliff and totally not Matt.
Yeah, that'll trick everyone. I think we should do that.
Yeah.
So getting back to the point, the game that I had to delay talking about from last week was Yakuza Kiwami, which is a remake/remaster of Yakuza 1, which released on the PS3. Many, many years ago, and has been remade in the sort of new engine that they built on PS4 for Yakuza 0, which was kind of a prequel game. So I'm kind of coming into this series fresh, very late in the game as they're starting to release these sort of prequels and remakes. Yakuza was the original game. Yakuza 0 is a new creation from last year, but it tells kind of the origin story of the character from Yakuza 1. and one of the side characters who you played as in Zero as well.
Right.
So I'm kind of getting more of a chronological release rather than the actual game release. So that's different. A friend of ours, Chris, he's a big Yakuza fan. He's been playing them for years and years and years. So it's been weird kind of me having to go to him with questions like, what the fuck is going on? And he's like, oh yeah, you'll find out about that in Yakuza 5.
Oh, nice, okay. Yeah.
Cool. Handy. Like, I will work my way through the series eventually. But yeah, so Yakuza 0 was kind of the origin story of Kiryu Kazuma, who's the main character of the Yakuza series, and Goro Majima, who is his kind of antagonist, but is kind of a beaten down Yakuza that you've got to try and get back in their good graces in Zero. So the original Yakuza game is he goes to jail for a murder committed by his best friend, comes out of jail 10 years later and has to sort of rejoin the Yakuza, and then there's drama with a little kid who's the daughter of one of his friends, or his friend's sister, and you know, there's lots of fighting and guns and drama. But then in between, you go and like play karaoke and race pocket circuit cars and do weird side quests. Weird,
random, dumb shit, by the sound of it.
Oh, for sure. Mm. And you can collect cards that have ladies dressed up as insects on them, which is apparently a new battle game that kids are playing in 2005 when this game is set.
Sure.
It's a weird mix.
It just sounds Japanese as fuck, that's all.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's this weird dual tone thing. The weirdest part for me, though, is Majima, who was one of the protagonists of Yakuza 0, in that he was very sort of stoic, your typical sort of badass Yakuza gangster type dude. He had his like eye patch because he had got tortured and had his eyes stabbed out once. And
that'll happen.
Big ponytail, and he's like always dressed nicely because he's running a cabaret as a way to make money for the Yakuza so he can get back in their good graces.
Sure.
But then you run into him after coming out of jail in Yakuza Kiwami, and for one thing, he's got a bowl cut, and for another thing, he's fucking batshit insane. Like,
makes sense.
He's walking around calling you Kiryu-chan, for one thing, which is like a sort of diminutive cute girl suffix or title. What do you call it? Honorific? Yeah, and he's trying to force you to fight him because he likes fighting and you're a good fighter. But Kiryu's like, no, I'm not going to fight you unless I've got a reason. And he's like, cool, I'll make up reasons. And then runs off after beating a guy half to death with an umbrella.
Sure.
Yeah. So on top of the serious tone of the game and all the weird side quests, they've added a new feature in this called Majima Everywhere, where basically just randomly he'll pop up in the street and fight you.
All right.
Or he'll have dressed up so he can sneak up on you and all this stuff. Like, at one point, I got tapped on the shoulder by a police officer as I was walking down the street. He's like, what do you think you're doing? And it was Majima in a costume. Another time, went into a bar, turn around, he's the bartender, and sort of racks up a huge tab for Kiryu, who has to fight him to get out of paying it. It's weird shit.
It kind of reminds me of the big Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy thing with Arthur Dent and that one guy. And Arthur Dent keeps killing him over and over and over again in a variety of different forms due to resurrection.
It's a little like that. Beating the crap out of instead of killing, and he likes it instead of hating it. But yeah, it's weird because Majima's still in the story of the game, and in his story scenes, he's a lot more kind of reserved and sort of like antagonistic, anti-hero type dude. But then in between, he's, yeah, like, dressing up in costumes and sneaking up on you. At times, you'll see him just sort of walking around the street in the crowds in this Japanese city, Kamurocho. And he'll get, like, this big pink exclamation mark over his head, and he's like, Kiryu! And, like, runs at you. Like, big, gawky, like, cartoony style. Right. So, it's a game that refuses to find its tone, and that is actually really great. They've also carried over some stuff they introduced for Zero, like, originally there was only one fighting style, and now you've got three, because mm-hmm. you've got three in Zero. Like a brawler style, beast, where you can pick up objects and smack people around with them, and kind of a really dodgy boxer type fighting style.
Mm-hmm.
But Majima had three in his kind of storyline in Zero as well. So, like, his were weird, though. He had, like, thug style, breakdancer, which is exactly what it sounds like, because the game was set in the 80s, so he learned how to breakdance fight.
Naturally.
And mm-hmm. just, like, smacking people around with a baseball bat, like, slugger style, I think they call it. So, you're fighting him and he sort of switches between his styles the same way you would have in playing Zero, so he's kind of giving more of a through line to that as well. But it's really fun, like, the fighting is solid, it's nice to be walking around the same city, like, it's kind of 25 years after the first game that I played was set. So some of it's familiar, I can kind of find my way around, but I'm always spotting new stuff. I'm like, oh, that wasn't there last time. I guess time has passed in this game. And they've already announced that Kiwami 2 will be coming, a remake of Yakuza 2.
So what's Kiwami mean?
It's like ultimate.
Okay, cool.
So it's like the ultimate Yakuza 1, because yeah. it's the best gotcha. Version of it.
That makes sense.
So yeah, they're kind of doing the same for Yakuza 2. I also realized that between sort of PSN sales and PlayStation Plus freebie titles, I already own Yakuza 4 and 5. And 3, I think I can pick up for $20 if I'm lucky, if I can find a physical copy. So yeah, I've pretty much got the entire series. And then Yakuza 6 comes out March next year, built on a whole new engine, which I've watched some footage of, and it looks amazing. Like, the Yakuza engine's pretty solid, but this one, it's like seamless transitions between inside and outside buildings, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but it's a very Japanese game, so it's kind of stuck in these scene transition kind of mechanics. Yeah, and just puddles, and you know, it's a big neon city being in Japan, so it's all very pretty looking, and I can't wait to, I don't know, like, become an idol in the streets and learn how to moonwalk or something. Oh, yeah, in Yakuza 0, Michael Jackson was in it, I should say.
Okay, except random.
His name was Miracle Johnson, and he was in Japan to film the film clip for his new music video, which is fighting a bunch of zombies in the streets, as directed by director Spielberg or something like that.
So clearly not about Michael Jackson or the Thriller video clip at all.
Or Steven Spielberg. No,
nothing about that.
And then afterwards, Steven Spielberg became a manager for my property business. So, good job, Japan. God, it's a weird series, and I love it. I'm going to play all of them. One series that I haven't played all of because I hated it was Monster Hunter, but I might have changed my mind this week with Monster Hunter Stories.
I've heard that it's kind of fun.
It kind of is fun. I played Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate for review at Survivor, Survivor.com, 2-3 years ago when it came out on 3DS, and I liked the monster design and sort of the character design, but the game is all grind, no story, which is the polar opposite of everything I like about games, so I didn't really put any more time into it after I finished the review. I put it down, I think I deleted it off my 3DS and just said, yep, never need to look at that again. And then 2 months later, they announced Stories, which is basically Monster Hunter Pokemon.
I got the impression that it was basically Pokemon.
Yeah.
To some
degree. So instead of killing monsters so you can turn them into jackets and stuff, you sort of fight monsters and steal eggs from nests so you can raise them as your friends, and then fight them against other monsters and also ride them around. And
it's Pokemon. Yeah. Gotcha.
It's Pokemon. So it's kind of got the same design flair, but more cartoonishy, and the grind doesn't feel as bad. It's sort of a rock, paper, scissors system for the combat,
mm-hmm.
Like speed, technical, or power moves, but you know, it's rock, paper, scissors.
Mm-hmm.
It's got enough depth to keep me interested, but I was really surprised to enjoy a Monster Hunter game ever, literally ever.
Yeah, I've never played it, but it just screamed Pokemon.
Oh, yeah.
When I saw it, yeah.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's even got a cartoon series based on it, I found.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they don't make DS games without doing TV series these days.
Pretty much not. Yeah, no, I'm really enjoying it. Like, I finished my review, which I think should be going live during the week. But I am actually going back and playing it more because it's actually fun. which is not a thing I ever expected to say about a Monster Hunter game. I really hope it gets a sequel, because it seems like that could be a series with legs, considering it's a side title where they basically went the exact opposite of the whole core concept of the Monster Hunter system. You're not hunting monsters, you're like Monster Best Friender.
I mean, you're still hunting them, but you're hunting them for good instead of evil.
Yeah, yeah. You're hunting down new members of your squad.
Yeah.
Hmm. So yeah, that's surprisingly enjoyable. Also, like, buttery smooth frame rate on the 3DS.
Oh, nice.
I don't actually know what the highest capability for frame rate is on the 3DS, but it's definitely a solid 30 at least.
Are you
and I think
playing it on the new DS?
I am, yeah.
Right. Is there a difference in actual hardware inside that thing?
Yeah, it has additional processor power. So the intent was that there'd be some games that needed that that had only released for that, like Xenoblade Chronicles did. But there hasn't really been any titles besides that that have required it. It's kind of like PlayStation 4 and PS Pro,
yeah.
Or I guess Xbox and Scorpio, or Xbox One X, where it refines the experience. And just smooths load times mainly. But yeah, this one, like, these are big open areas, being a Monster Hunter game. You're sort of roaming around the environment. There's no real stutter there. And, you know, in more close quarters, like, it's really smooth. Like, smoother than any of the Pokemon games we've managed.
Okay, that's nice.
So, yeah, I don't know. It must be sort of adjustable frame rate depending on what kind of scene you're in. But yeah, like, I was really impressed. Like, I'm watching this and, like, this looks like it could be, you know, between 30 and 60 frames a second on a portable console.
Nice.
Which, I was impressed with. So, if you like being best friends with monsters and tapping on eggs so that they are stronger when they get hatched, then go get this game. Also, there's a weird cat best friend in it.
So that immediately won you over, right?
It helped. It definitely helped.
Yeah.
Hmm. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. And we'll continue to play, weirdly enough.
Score.
Hmm.
So it's nice to be pleasantly surprised by a game.
Yeah, I quite enjoy it. I try not to go in with prejudices to any kind of review, but I kind of sort of sign on the dotted line for Monster Hunter thinking, this might be a bad one.
It is tough, though, because some things just feel like they're designed to grate on you, and you can't help but go in with prejudice, but yeah, it's always nice to be pleasantly surprised when that happens.
Yeah, it's often a problem... And I realize that both games that I'm playing this week have fallen into the category, but Japanese developed games have a bad habit of sticking to the tried and true formula, which is the same reason why sort of Mario and Zelda have kind of just flatlined until they finally admitted they needed to do something new and did Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey. Because, yeah, they just get stuck in a rut and it can be really frustrating at times. Just like lack of convenience in kind of design and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like Nintendo games are notorious for that though. Like absolutely. Yeah. Like they run rampant with that shit.
Yeah. Like games that still have save points. That's ridiculous. You should be able to save anywhere in any game.
I will concede depending on the game and how it's set up, but
I mean, yeah,
save
Dark
points
Souls
are pretty
like
old
that.
School. Yeah.
Like a Dark Souls style game where you need to progress to sort of feel safe, fine, but like Yakuza, for example, in the Yakuza series, you save by using a phone, like you call and save your game basically. So Yakuza 0 was set in the 80s, so you don't have mobile phones, so you have to go find a phone booth to save.
Yep.
Which, sure, it was a real relief when I got into Yakuza Kiwami. And it's now 2005 in the game, and he's got a shitty cell phone, so I can call and save at any time. But yeah, like having to roam and find a phone box and go through more street fights just to save my game so I can go do something else was a little bit frustrating. So it's always nice when a Japanese game especially kind of bucks that trend and says, oh no, let's put, you know, conveniences that have been added to games in the last 15 years.
Yeah. I mean, most of the time games these days, especially open world type games, it's all mission-y checkpointed stuff. So as soon as you do anything or progress in any mission or anything like that, it auto-saves for you. And if it doesn't, then yeah, you like games like Skyrim, which is also open world, you basically just save whenever you want. And it does auto-save, but you can just save whenever you want as well. So
Quick saving is important, like proper checkpointing. if it's not there, like, that is an instant bomber for a review for me. Anytime there's just not poorly checkpointed or doesn't offer checkpoints, or fucking games that don't start auto-saving until you manually save for the first time.
That's a thing?
That shit.
Why is that a thing?
That is a thing. I can't remember what it was. There was a game I was talking about maybe 3 or 4 episodes ago now that had that. It didn't make any sort of save progress because I hadn't manually gone and saved for the first time to create the auto-save slot.
Dumbest fucking thing ever.
It is. No, it's so dumb. Like, the moment I start up the game, create auto-save slot, you know, when this icon's showing on the screen, don't turn off the console. Yes, I know. Just do it. Fuck. Anyway, let's talk about game news. Because that'll be less frustrating.
Well, you say that, but let's see.
I am going to work backwards up the list of stuff I've got. So actually, the first one might be a point of contention. So Splatoon 2, has continued the trend of Splatoon 1 in that they have kind of community battles where they've sort of have two sides of a question that you sort of vote on by playing for that team. So they just recently did one that was like, which superpower would you pick? Invisibility or flight? Flight, obviously. Don't even. No. No.
Look, you can't hit what you can't see.
Yeah, but you also can't hit what's flying 400 feet up in the fucking sky.
Sure you can. We have SAM sights for that.
I don't think they're designed to target a freewheeling sky boy. But yeah, the flight won like 90%, pretty much.
I'm assuming it's because it was in the game, but was massively overpowered compared to invisibility.
Oh, no, you don't get the mechanic. It's just they'll say like, the flight side is blue, the invisibility side is green, so you pick which team you play for in the matches.
It's not even topical in that you get some sort of weird ability.
No, no, it's just like, dumb. It's just a reason to take sides, and then they sort of calculate the winner based on how many players chose each side, and then also how much paint they sort of splattered on the arena.
See, that I knew. See, this one seems weird, because I expected that there'd be some sort of actual like thematic thing to it, but the one that was the first example of this was it was the mayo versus
ketchup.
Yeah, that's an actual thing because you could like it was color based, so you could spray colors. That's
they easy. Didn't actually do the colors because
what the fuck is okay? This game is just no.
Cliff, think about it. Mayo versus ketchup. Ketchup, fine. That's red paint. But mayo would be creamy white stuff being splattered
don't
all over.
Choose mayo.
For children.
Choose mustard. Problem solved.
But that wasn't the vote, though,
no,
was it?
Because
it was...
these game developers are clearly idiots.
Yeah, but if they sort of literally stuck to the color scheme, it would be, who's going to win? Blood versus cum.
Yeah, but like people aren't just making those, you know, kind of things. The whole game is literally like spraying your goo over other people and things.
Yeah,
so
it's true.
It's a flimsy thing at best, even without these, you know, fancy modes and the colors and stuff like that.
Yeah, but the latest one that has become a bit of a point of contention is it's sponsored by McDonald's, for one thing. So they're doing some... I think they're doing like a Happy Meal Splatoon thing in Japan for it as well. But it's taking sides. Which would you choose? Team Fries or Team McNuggets?
But it's not even they're not even comparable objects.
That's the thing, though. In Japan, fries and nuggets are both sides that you can add on to a meal.
So I can have a, say, for example, a double cheeseburger with bacon meal, but nuggets instead of my fries.
Yeah.
Why the fuck is it not everywhere?
How good is that?
Why would you ever choose fries?
Fries are pretty good, but they're just padding around meat. So, yeah, give me a side of nuggets. Jeez.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's a divisive thing, because for us Western folk... It's like, which would you like, a main or a side?
Yeah.
Obviously, you're going to pick nuggets.
Why would anyone ever choose fries anywhere?
Man, I want some nuggets now.
I have to hate it just on the basis that it's bullshit. Corporate. Like, disgusting product placement.
But yeah, I don't know if they ever did any in previous games. Though I do know that McDonald's have partnered with games companies in the past, especially in Japan. There was a demo for the original Parappa the Rapper, where the first level is kind of set in a burger bar, which in the main game is unbranded, but in the demo was heavily McDonald's branded. So you're making Big Macs or something. Same thing with the demo for Ape Escape. It was all sort of McDonald's. There were like burgers and fries floating in the sky and stuff like that. So it has a standing in Japan, but I don't know if they've ever done a sponsored one for Splatoon before.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, I have to hate it just because it's a sponsored one.
Yeah. Team McNuggets. That's me. I'm Team McNuggets. This week's episode is sponsored by McDonald's.
You got to go with nuggets just because you only ever get fries. And you never get nuggets with meals, so you have to choose nuggets.
Sweet nugs. Gotta love them. In other news, the director for Star Wars Episode 9 got the boot. Colin Trevorrow is no longer the director for Star Wars 9.
Yep, apparently due to their creative vision differences, is what they said, wasn't it?
It was that usual sort of like what we wanted it to be didn't match up, so goodbye.
So this has been a bit of contention with other Star Wars movies, specifically the Han Solo movie, where they hire a director, they hire him because he did a good job with these other movies that have a very specific tone, a very specific style. They're basically more lighthearted, fun, more comedy-centric stuff. And you hire them because of these movies that did very well, and then you get halfway through making the movie and you go, oh, no, we don't want that type of movie. So why'd you even hire these jackasses? Now,
should you really be disagreeing with like Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who brought us the Lego movie, which was a very fun movie?
Exactly. So they were going for a more fun romp through the Star Wars universe. Han Solo, he's a scoundrel. He's very, you know, he lends to comedic stuff all through. Like he is a comedic kind of semi-foil in the Star Wars movies at points. And yet they hire these guys and then they basically then throw them out because it's not what they want for that particular movie. Now, I can get that they want them to be kind of consistent in the main line movies, the episode movies. I can kind of see what they want there, like, because the episode movies are the more important movies. That's what Star Wars is. It's the mainline movies. So I can understand why they would go creative differences over a mainline movie. That's fine. But I don't get why they would go over a anthology movie where that's kind of where you want to go a bit weirder. You want to go a bit different. You want to experiment a bit more because you can get away with it there and you can't get away with it in mainline movies.
Exactly. And apparently in the last day or so, there's been reports coming out saying that he was reportedly difficult to work with. So I guess that may well just be to do with like his intended tone for the movie versus...
He wanted certain things and the Lucasfilm he was being very steadfast in that. Hmm. Who was this guy? He's done some good stuff, hasn't he? I forget his name.
Trevorrow. He has...
He's done some very good stuff.
He did Jurassic World.
Yes, that's him. Yep, I very much like that movie. People seem to hate it for reasons, but I thought it was quite enjoyable.
Yeah. I don't have any sort of huge dedication to the Jurassic franchise, so I had no problem with it. I found it enjoyable.
The thing about the Jurassic World universe is you can never top Jurassic Park. There's just no point even trying to top Jurassic Park. You got to stop comparing all these Jurassic Park movies to Jurassic Park, because it will never be Jurassic Park. It'll never have the grandeur of seeing that on the big screen for the first time. It just can't compete. They can still be very good movies, though. And Jurassic World is a good movie. It's a good Jurassic Park movie.
Hmm. And they liked it well enough that he's sticking around for the sequel, so that's a good sign.
Yep.
But Star Wars does not agree. Yeah.
I guess not. I guess maybe he wanted certain things. Maybe he had a lot more control over the Jurassic World movies, and so we thought maybe he could have some sort of control over the Star Wars movie, but obviously Star Wars are saying no. Disney's going, nah, it's got to be within these boundaries. To make it, which, like I said, for an episode movie, I'll cop that. I'll understand that because they want to be a bit more rigid on that. But just make fucking weird, super crazy anthology movies, please. Just super weird shit. Out there stuff you'd never get.
Yeah, just come on, like, break out. Like, there's so much Star Wars out there. And if you've deleted the entire EU, you may as well sort of mess around in the new universe you're creating.
And if you're going to make an Obi-Wan movie, you better get fucking Ewan McGregor back as Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Ewan McGregor... He's aged enough to play like a slightly older Obi-Wan
And he was great in episode 2 and 3.
Hmm.
He was kind of nothing in episode 1, but a lot of people were nothing in episode one, but he was great in episode two and three. I really liked episode three, especially Obi-Wan. He was funny.
Yeah.
He was good.
For sure. moving along, the new South Park game has made news.
Oh,
for
boy.
A little bit of social satire.
And it's pretty great. I'm not going to lie.
I thought it, I mean, for especially for a South Park thing, it's pretty smart satire.
I would actually kind of argue that everything they do is pretty smart. They just present it in usually a very lowbrow way, but it's always very biting satire, the stuff they do.
Mm. But yeah, so during the character creator process, you go through all the steps. You can pick a boy or a girl, for one thing, which is new compared to the last game.
No, you can't. You can only create a boy.
But you can make him girlish?
Yeah, so you create a boy character, and then, of course, you get the infamous skin tone slider, skin tone slash difficulty slider.
Yes, so yeah. While you're creating your character, you have a difficulty slider, and as you go from easy to difficult, it changes your character's skin tone from white to dark.
Yeah. Which is pretty funny in a very dark way. There's no pun intended on that.
Yep. And apparently there's like a sort of a little message from Cartman, who's kind of the narrator of the game, at the same time saying, don't worry, this doesn't affect combat, just every other aspect of your whole life.
You earn less money out of encounters, all that kind of stuff. You're treated differently, apparently. But then after you created your character, you have to go... apparently it's a direct sequel, so you're no longer a fantasy character, you're now a superhero. So you have to, It wipes your old character sheet and you have to create a new superhero character. So you're back to level one again. You've got to rise up the ranks. And then at one point you have to actually speak to Mr. Mackey about it. And Mr. Mackey asks, are you a boy or a girl or something similar like that? And at that point, if you say girl, Mr. Mackey says, oh, I just thought you were a boy. Are you like a boy or are you a like a trans, like whatever? And ask that question, and then even calls your parents to confirm, like, oh shit, we've been doing this all wrong. I guess, yeah, we'll fix that up from now on. And then that's how you retcon your gender to how you want it to be in the second game, which is actually kind of genius.
It's nice that they're kind of offering that coverage, not just for sort of male or female, but for sort of between cisgender and transgender as well.
Mm.
It's more inclusive for a game where I think one of their attacks is like you fart on someone's face.
Like I said, also very biting satire, usually very clever, but very lowbrow presentation. So yes.
Also, the game is not being censored the way it was for the previous title in Australia, where they cut out some scenes. So
excellent.
The portion of the game where you have to give a lap dance to a grown adult will be present and available in the Australian version. So hooray!
Excellent. I do also the name is genius as well.
The Fractured But Whole.
Yep.
Yeah,
pure gold. So it seems like they're very much on point with this game. They know exactly what they're going after, and it should be very fun to play.
Yeah, I have never really watched South Park, so I haven't played any South Park games. I don't know. It doesn't get me. But
there are some downright genius level episodes out there, and there's also some episodes that are just absolutely just junk or just disgusting or stuff. But you know, I mean, yeah, the great episodes of South Park are great episodes of South Park.
I think that'll be on a maybe later list for the rest of my life. It's kind of interesting that they're doing some social satire there that is getting people's attention, which is, I mean, a pretty good way of generating buzz for a game that's been in development hell for God knows how long. Mm. A game that's not in development hell, but the developers are in hell because their studio collapsed. L.A. Noire is coming to the Switch.
Yay.
And the PS4 and the Xbox One and PSVR.
Sure.
Which I think is kind of interesting. I mean, for one, like, that's a very grown-up game to have on the Switch. This is a game with murder and prostitution and drugs and swears. They say swears in it.
Oh no.
Yeah. I'll be impressed to see it running.
Won't
on
somebody
the Switch,
think
actually.
Of the children on the Switch.
Please think of the children.
It's almost like they need some sort of parental lock system that they already have that they've had for ages that they should have just released adult games on every console they've had.
Yeah. Nintendo is a fickle mistress when it comes to grown up stuff, but they seem to be getting better with it. So yeah, L.A. Noire will be coming. I think they said something about some new content in the game as well. I don't know that it'll fix the ending. Yeah. But yeah, so it's like it's being remastered for PS4 and Xbox One at the same time. But there'll also be VR content, which I'm guessing will be doing the interviews, but sort of in person. So you can see all the tells and stuff sort of right in front of you, as obvious as they were.
I've never played it, so I don't.
Oh, really?
Nah, I never played it. It was made by an Aussie studio, though, wasn't it, that then went...
Yep, Team Bondi.
Yeah.
And then after the game came out, the studio collapsed, and they were one of the last big development studios in Australia. So that was a bit sad. But, yeah, the face tech in it was really impressive for the time, and still pretty impressive to this day. Like, they captured full video and motion capture for actual actors, and then kind of wrapped it onto these models, so it wasn't perfect... But it was a lot more realistic, especially for a game where half the game is sort of interviewing people and trying to figure out when they're lying. So they had to exaggerate the tells a little bit. So it'll be like, I don't know where my husband went, darting eyes all over the place. But yeah, still pretty impressive. And moving on to the Switch and VR, it's been years since this game came out, so... Hopefully if it does well,
I'm assuming
Rockstar might bring it back.
Yeah, I'm assuming because the studio... Was this the team that made it? Were they always a subsidiary of Rockstar, or were they bought? Well, did Rockstar basically like snap up the IP?
I think it might have been a small studio that was acquired by Rockstar and then grown for the game specifically.
Right. Okay. Cool.
It's been a while since I sort of actively read about Team Bondi. The independent third party game developer.
Okay.
They were published by Rockstar.
Right. Okay. Did then Rockstar take over the IP?
I think they own the IP. There was a lot of stuff at the time, some possibly not so great business practices around the Team Bondi team not being sort of paid or acknowledged for their work properly. So I think Rockstar retain ownership of the franchise and kind of the branding, but they've never done anything else with it other than these kind of remasters, which, yeah, I think they did... a polished version a few years ago, and now this is coming back again, which is kind of a surprise out of nowhere. But yeah, like anything a bit more sort of adult and non-directly Nintendo, I'd welcome on the Switch, which is slowly building an actually pretty interesting library.
I mean, if they bring out just... they stop bringing ports to the Switch, they might actually get more people on the Switch.
That's true. Well, the other thing that's generating buzz for Nintendo this week is hot off the presses, some news about one of their leading men. Mario's not a plumber anymore.
And hasn't been a plumber since we've basically known him, so I don't really see what the big deal is, because people are going fucking nuts about this.
I mean, he hasn't plumbed in a while, for sure, but now they've explicitly said they've stopped describing him as a plumber. Who also saves the Mushroom Kingdom. They say he used to be a plumber, but now he's more like a sportsman because he plays tennis and does karting and soccer and...
everything else that Nintendo wants him to do. Fights rabbits.
Yeah. I'm still playing that.
Yeah, I don't see why people are making such a big deal about it. We've never actually seen him do any plumbing. He's always been busy doing other things to actually do any plumbing. The plumber thing was pretty much just... a way to explain why there's pipes in the game.
Yeah.
So, and why he's an everyman, not that his character was even developed as any kind of character at all, except a bunch of pixels on the screen as a sprite. I don't see why people are freaking the fuck out. It hasn't changed Mario in any way. He's still Mario. Yeah. I don't get it.
I don't know. It's more that it's fun to get sort of up in arms about it as much as anything else.
I guess it's the internet age at the moment, isn't it? Up in arms about every little dumb thing.
Yeah, but it's like saying that Sonic doesn't love chili dogs anymore. Like, what? He loves chili dogs. That's half his character.
No, but he wasn't a chili dog vendor, and now he's not a chili dog vendor.
But it's a core part of his identity.
But you're not what you do. You're not, what you do doesn't define you.
What he does is eat chili dogs.
Yeah. That's what part of it. And the other bit is he runs fast. He's got to go fast.
Also, chili dogs are fucking disgusting. Chili dogs put chili on a hot dog.
Awesome.
No.
Chili dogs are great.
Mm,
I know what chili dogs. damn it, the shops are closed now. It's bullshit.
Nuggets and chili dogs. Yeah, so R.I.P. Mario's plumbing career.
I mean, it's such a dumb thing to get upset about. If in every game there was lots of plumbing references and it showed him actually plumbing and all of a sudden not, I would understand. But he's never plumbed at any point in any game.
That's true. Maybe they'll come out with like a Mario Plumbing Classic game or something.
Maybe he was recently changed by the Tesseract to be not a plumber.
This is a new theory, I'm liking it.
And at some point they'll retcon it so he'll actually be... So the Plumber Mario will emerge from a pocket universe inside the Tesseract and then come out and defeat him and become normal Plumber Mario again and continue to not plumb.
Are you implying that non-Plumber Mario is a Nazi?
Look, I'm not saying that he's a Nazi or not. I'm just saying it could be a thing. Just throwing it out there.
Hail Hydro.
I don't want to actually acknowledge most of your jokes because they're so bad most of the time, but I'll pay that. That's actually pretty decent.
Thank you. Final bit of news that I've got here for this week. I've got two things. First one is just a little thing. So the Pokemon anime is currently sort of covering the Sun and Moon games. Everyone is excited at the moment because there's a two or three parter episode coming up in the next few weeks in the Japan run of the show, where Ash will be going back to Kanto and visiting Misty and Brock and all his old Pokemon. I don't know why. It's not like you ever did that in the original games. But it's nice because you get to see all the old characters in this sort of new, looser animation style they've been doing for Sun and Moon as well. And it seems like it's all the emotions, but it might also be a way of hinting that Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon might feature a return to Kanto, same as we discussed the other week with the Lieutenant Surge-looking gym. Which, if it is, that's a good bit of stealth. It's a good bit of stealth marketing, if that's what they're going for.
It's either that, or it's just massive fan service.
Definitely that.
They're going, everyone's complaining because there's no Brock and Misty. I guess we'll just make them go back and hang out with them. And the ratings will skyrocket for those few episodes and then trail off again.
Yeah. I mean, it does consistently well in Japan, regardless.
Oh, man, that's not surprising at all.
Yeah. Just in the little trailer I saw, which was like a next time on Pokemon kind of thing, they had sort of Brock running after a girl and Misty dragging him by the ear.
Classic Pokemon.
Everyone hugs Pikachu again. Professor Oak was there, and I think Ash's mum.
Of course, Professor Oak is Doinkin.
Oh, Ash's mum. Sure.
Like, no questions about it. Like, that's happening.
He's the poking mum professor. I'm not getting a nod for that one.
You're not getting that one, no.
Oh, God, I thought that was pretty good. But yeah, he also gets to see his Bulbasaur again, and his Muk, which I'd forgotten he had a Muk. And the 30 Tauros he caught in that one episode that never aired outside of Japan because it had a gun in it.
Everything those statements is just, it's all innuendo. Gets to see his Bulbasaur again, gets to see his Muk again. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, his smelly Muk who loves him so much. Yeah, it's a nice little bit to it. And yeah, I'm hoping that it is kind of pointing in the direction of a reveal for Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon that will actually make me want to buy that game because I get to go back to Kanto. Final bit of news is one that you'll probably know more about than me. I heard that Bungie released a video game this week.
Yeah, some sort of sequel to a game that was already pretty big, although not on PC for another 5 weeks.
Ha.
Fuck you.
Ha ha.
Fuck you, Bungie. The beta ran perfectly smooth. Why? Why 5 weeks or 6 weeks? Why not 1 or 2 weeks? It's going to be the game is going to be so played out already that people are going to have completed the raid a month before we actually get to go and experience it, which is a little bit disappointing.
I know that a lot of writer friends of mine, by the end of the launch day, they were reporting they'd completed all the story content. Yep. So the raid content is not far behind.
The raid content is open next week. Yep. So it doesn't open for the first week. Yeah. But anyway, so the game came out. It reportedly is very, very good. It's Destiny, you know, plus on it. So they've taken everything they learned from Destiny and put it into, you know, Destiny 2. It's probably very good, mm-hmm. except for one thing, which annoys the shit out of me and apparently has been annoying other people too.
Yes. Do tell.
So in the first game, you could get shaders, and the shaders would alter your appearance to make you multicolored in a variety of aesthetic or not aesthetic at all ways. Horrible yep. color combinations. And what it was is you get the item and you had the item and you basically just apply whatever shader you want at any particular time and you are that color. It seems like in this one, shaders drop as items. You then one time use them and they are consumed to alter the colors of one piece of armor.
Yeah, this has been kind of a trade-off. Like, you can customize individual portions of your armor and weaponry, I think. But, mm-hmm. yeah, they're consumables, so you can't sort of apply all or anything.
Which is not a big problem, except that it is, because the game is constantly giving you different items and newer, better upgrades. And it means you will use an item, and then, of course, because the way the RNG works in these games, you get fucked over massively. You don't get anything for 3 weeks. You think, oh yeah, well, I'll put that shader on that item then because I'm not going to get an upgrade. Insta get an upgrade to it within 5 minutes of doing that, and then that shader is now gone and you have to earn it again. Now, whether the shaders will actually be dropping readily, I haven't seen too much about that yet. But the big problem about this is that, weirdly, you can actually purchase shaders via microtransactions.
Yes, you'll be able to buy the bright engrams, I think it is, that can be used to unlock loot boxes, which can contain shaders. So people are saying that it could be that this is Microsoft's way of ensuring sort of ongoing income through microtransactions, because people will just sort of throw cash at that so they can be the prettiest Guardian they can be.
It's just a kind of, this is a dick move.
It's not great.
It's not good at all.
The other thing I'm seeing is that apparently it's really hard to get a Sparrow, the sort of rideable vehicle, this time around. They don't automatically drop as part of the campaign. They become a rare drop in certain missions or something.
Okay, so I guess you'd be farming that for a bit.
Yeah, like it's meant to be... They were sort of saying, yeah, they've got these new areas and they want you to sort of actively explore them rather than just racing through them, which is great. Until one person in your strike team or party or whatever it's called gets their Sparrow sort of finally as a drop and either has to race ahead of and leave you behind or basically waste the Sparrow just sort of cruising alongside the rest of the party while they walk.
I mean, why not just give you a Sparrow at the end of the story quest? Why not just do that? So you have to do your time in the story, and once you've stopped playing the story and you don't give a shit about all these areas, you can just fast travel around with your Sparrow.
Yeah, and I've been hearing that, I can't remember the character's name, but someone who was a shipwright sort of in charge of giving out Sparrows in Destiny 1, and you could buy Sparrows or different versions of the Sparrow mm-hmm. offer, no longer does that. So people are looking for her, saying, you know, shipwright Shelley, give me a Sparrow. And she's like, nah, I'm doing something else now. So everyone's kind of up in arms about that a little bit as well. Because, it would suck to be the last of your friends to finally get a Sparrow drop.
Yeah, that's going to be a bit of a problem, I think. Unless you can carry someone on your Sparrow.
Oh, yeah, like ride sort of on the back wheel.
Yeah, you can ride bitch, effectively.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it just seems like a couple of decisions like this. Like while the shaders don't really mean shit, it's just kind of a dick move to make them consumable for an individual piece. So you have to farm the same thing over again. One of the worst things about Destiny 1 was the amount of farming you had to do, the same few things you had to do over and over again. Apparently it's going to be individual spots, so you know that if you want to get certain colors will drop on certain planets in certain spots, stuff like that. So you'll know where to go to get your to farm. But if that part of the game is super boring, then
Yeah, I guess we'll have to see how it plays out over time. Obviously, everyone's up in arms because it's a thing that's different to begin with. But it could be that there's a better mechanic in mind or other things to kind of offset it.
Yeah. And admittedly, the shaders might drop pretty commonly, so it might not be that much of a problem. So you might end up... apparently, Destiny did come out, or the Bungie came out and said you'll find that you just have a shit ton of shaders on you. And if that's the case, that's not so bad, because it means quite common. But there's always going to be those rare epic ones that are the cool color that you want, and it'll never drop. And as soon as it does drop and you use it, you will upgrade that piece of armor. And
yeah. And then you either have to hope you get the rest to fill out the set, or you're going to waste that by sort of overriding it with something else. So if like rare or event type ones were permanent, that would be cool. But yeah, just a new way of doing things.
Yeah.
It might be great. There was another
thing with Destiny as well that was people were funny about. Oh, yeah. So, you know, whenever a game comes out that's online, the servers always go down.
Yep.
It's just, that's a given, right? I saw people complaining because the servers went down. It was fine day one. Day two, everything went to shit, apparently. So servers were down. But the servers apparently only went to shit on PS4, apparently. Xbox Live was fine. So it went down on PS4, and people were tweeting dumb shit like, oh, the servers are down. I feel ripped off because they've had a couple of hours on day two of a game that's designed to be played for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And they're feeling ripped off because they can't play for a couple of hours on day two. It's like, you'll be fine, sweet child of summer. You don't know what winter's like.
Travesty.
Yeah, you haven't experienced winter yet, so you'll be fine.
I did get to have a real hero moment myself around the Destiny launch, though. A friend of mine was lamenting on Twitter that he'd have to wait for the forever PSN download of like the day one patches and everything, and then have to wait in queue to try and get into the server. And it's like, oh, this download's going to take forever. Like, I'm not even going to be able to start the game until tomorrow. And I just sort of got to jump on and say, hey, have you done the thing where you block the one shitty Kyoto server that slows down all PSN downloads for everybody? And he said, what the fuck are you talking about? There is a single server in Kyoto, Japan that for some reason gets prioritized for a lot of downloads for Australian users especially, but it is a very slow server. So a download that could take an hour instead takes 6 hours. So someone sort of isolated the IP range for that server, and if you blacklist it on your modem, you can speed up your downloads. And I've been doing it for months, and honest to God, my sort of PlayStation quality of life has improved so much. Because things don't take... they're still big downloads. They'll take longer. But on average, downloads are pretty snappy. So I got to sort of convey this message. And then an hour later, it's like, I'm in! I'm playing the fucking game! Yeah. So that was a nice moment. Actually, I might add that to the show notes for anyone who's interested to speed up their PSN downloads. There is a guide on Survivor.com. Which can show you how to do that.
The theory was that's what kind of happened with Destiny 2, is that day one was fine because only a few people could actually clog up the network. But as soon as everyone's downloads finished around day two, like overnight, that's when it went to shit, which is not surprising at all. And that is kind of a problem with modern games where you buy the game, you install the game, and then you download the entire game again as a first day patch, which is, let's face it, that shit's kind of unacceptable. Companies have to do better with that. Why are you downloading all the resources again? The resources should be set, right?
Or at least most of the resources should be consistent. Any you're updating, overwrite
like
them.
Did when you updated that patch to stop that thing from, you know, interacting with the other thing and causing mass destruction, why did all the textures need to be re-downloaded that take up all the game space? Like, why? Why did all the music need to be re-downloaded?
This is the exact problem I had with Skyrim when it first launched. I bought a physical copy in a store, like an idiot. And I got home, and essentially, it was a DVD case with a DVD in it that was blank except for a Steam code.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that there was actually any data on the CD or the DVD.
It's not acceptable, really. And if you're going to bring out a game, it needs to be able to be preloaded 3 days before. At a minimum, so that you can actually have the data and play it on day one. It should be able to pre-download the day one patches.
There's good standing for that on Steam for sure. Although, for me, most of the games I download on Steam are sort of smaller or indie stuff, which doesn't become available or even list a price until they've actually launched. But PSN and Xbox Live have been doing sort of preload stuff for a while now. You can sort of pre-order the game, load the data, and then decrypt it on day one, basically. I'm a fan because I like pressing the go button and playing your thing straight away.
Well, with the Destiny 2 beta, going through Battle.net, you could preload the beta, and then it just downloaded a 100 meg patch when it unlocked, and that unlocks the game for you, like a decryption patch, basically. Awesome. That's perfect. Why not do that? Why not design your network in a way that all the shit that you don't need to download all over again is already downloaded and encrypted, and you just decrypt it in, you know, 5-10 minutes when you've purchased the game. Companies need to do better with that stuff, for sure. The networks need to do better to offset a... Because you're effectively, in some games, you're downloading the entire game again. Why?
Yeah, and it's so frustrating. You get all keen to play a game, and then it's like, nope, not going to be playing this today, probably.
Exactly. It happened with me for the Dead Rising launch game on Xbox. I got
Dead Rising 3, yeah.
And then I couldn't actually play it for like a day and a half.
I know they've gotten better with this. PSN I'm most familiar with. A lot of games will have sort of an initial download chunk so you can start playing the game, and then the rest of the content, which usually means like the first hour of gameplay worth of data or so. Not always, though. Just to give you a chance to sort of get in and hopefully have the rest download in the background. But yeah, still could be better.
They did that with the Master Chief Collection, and the servers were just a massive piece of shit when it launched, and nothing worked, and you could barely download it. You couldn't really play anything of the game. You had to download all the multiplayer, but then if you wanted to play co-op, you had to download all the multiplayer to get it. Like, it was just an absolute mess. The only interest I had in that game was to play the campaign through co-op. And it was just, when we finally did get into it, the rubber banding and the lag between the characters, it was just too big. It was bad.
I got the Master Chief Collection just to play it in solo, because I don't like playing with other people.
I just wanted to play co-op because I wasn't that engaged with it that I need to know all the things and get engaged with it solo. I just wanted to kind of burn through it and get enough of the story to appease the Halo gods. Yeah. But yeah.
That said, I don't like playing with other people, but I kind of want to play Destiny 2 because apparently it's got more story now, and I am down for that. Space opera.
Well, hey, look, Destiny 1 had plenty of story if you wanted to then go to the Bungie website and then read it all. So no, that's not how things work. They went too far. Like, that stuff is good, but they went too far with it. That was the problem. There was not enough in the game itself, and there was too much on the website to read.
Try again, Destiny. Try again,
and
Bungie.
They have,
you heard it
first. Apparently it's good.
Yeah. So glad they listened to us pre us saying these things. Yep, I think that will just about bring us to the end of this week's ranting hour. It's kind of been a bit of a rant this week.
There's some good stuff in there, though.
Yeah, I mean, we did talk about Chicken McNuggets for a good, like, 3 minutes solid.
Yeah, but then I got ranting about Splatoon and, you know, things, which then reminded me just then that they do that bullshit thing where you can only play certain modes on certain days. I fucking hate that, too.
Yeah.
I've seen articles come out and they go, oh, no, but it's actually not that bad. You actually get used to it. It's like nothing that you ever... Whenever you say, it's actually not that bad, you get used to it. That doesn't make it good. It's like, yeah, cool, you get used to the pain of like a broken arm, but you still got a fucking broken arm.
Okay, so maybe it was not a balanced episode.
I need to go have another beer. I need to have I'm getting fired up here.
Sweet and sour episode.
Yeah. I need another beer. Let's finish this up so I can drink more.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to us complain at each other aggressively for an hour, aka the Indoorsman podcast.
But if you like our opening and closing music, which is Fuck Sidechain Compression on Game Boy by Rocco W, please show it some love by going to Bandcamp or just Googling him or that and finding it wherever you can get it. Throw a few bucks his way, download his stuff, listen to it. It's good.
It is very good. You can also show your love to us at indoorsmanpodcast.com or The Indoorsman on Facebook, as well as at indoorsmanpod for Twitter and Instagram. Twitter, where currently nothing happens, so maybe you should talk to us. And Instagram, you can look at our cover art, which is very good.
Yeah, I feel like with the Twitter thing, it's people engage with you if they show that you're doing things, but the quickest way to do things is to have people engage with you. It's one of those cycles. You just need a critical mass. Once you're already going, you're fine. When you're in the middle of it, it's just the starting bit that's the tough engagement bit.
Yeah, we need that one dank nug of a tweet to really kick things off.
Yes, that's what we need, yeah. But if you want to actually, you know, tweet at myself or at Matt. You can get me at Clifford Monkey or Matt at Ponk. And if you want to actually like send us an email or anything like that, you can get us at contact@indoorsmanpodcast.com.
That is correct. If there's anything you'd like us to talk about, anything we've gotten wrong, anything we've gotten right, any opinions on McNuggets, please get in touch and let us know. We'd also love it if you could subscribe, review, and rate the show on iTunes. Not necessarily about McNuggets, but the podcast itself in general.
I mean, I would laugh if I got a review that was just a lengthy review of a McNugget on our podcast scene. As long as it reviewed us highly, that'd be funny.
Yeah, as long as it's 5 stars and then 3 pages about sort of the status of McNuggets in the modern world.
Basically, a Steam review for us. That's nothing about the Steam review is nothing about the game. It's just complete random shit. Yeah.
Yes. Please review McNuggets on iTunes or your pod medium of choice via our podcast.
But for now, he's been Angry Matt.
And he's been less angry than usual, Cliff.
I mean, it's just, you can't really put any kind of angry prefix on my name, because I mean, that's just me. I'm just angry all the time anyway. I'm like Bruce Banner.
It's like saying ATM machine.
Yeah, yeah.
But by endorsement tradition, we will sign off this week's episode by saying something like, I need a plumber. Who am I going to call? It's not Mario.
You're going to call He-Man. He'll fix it up.
There's an idea. Maybe Luigi's still in the plumbing business. No one's ever said what his status is.
That was a sweet Ghostbusters 2 reference.
I skipped over it because I never watched Ghostbusters 2.
What?